Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. If you're an entrepreneur out there, I think this podcast episode is going to be perfect for you. See, when you grow a company, it might start with you, but the whole goal is to increase your sales force, right? That's how you get freedom. That's how you grow. That's how you serve many clients. And I'm in the midst of doing that. So we've grown substantially over the past 2 or 3 years. We've been around for 8 years, but the sales force is starting to explode and I want to do it the right way. That's why we're having our next guest on. He wrote a book called Set Up to Win, Three Frameworks to a High Performing Sales Organization. And you can pick it up on Amazon right now. And we have the author with us today, Carl Becker. Thanks so much for being here, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Love talking about sales and growing companies and empowering and up-leveling people. So this is right up my alley.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the genesis of the book and maybe a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I'll start with the book. So I guess maybe I'll mix it all together. So I've always been an entrepreneur. And if you're like me, entrepreneur is about bringing an idea out of the market and kind of seeing if it sticks.
Love
and
it.
To me, yep. I mean, you're a creator, you like ideas, you like to help people, you get excited. And to me, if you're doing that, it's not work. You're having a good time. And so I've had a lot of different companies. And at one point in my time in my life, I had a marketing company, a digital marketing company, I ran for about 10 years. That big, great recession came and just kicked me in the butt. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to reinvent myself. And so I closed that company down and I was like, I'm reinventing myself. What does the market need? And I was like, there are a bunch of entrepreneurs and business owners. And we always are like, gosh, if I could just clone myself, I could sell more.
Yeah.
And I was right. One of those guys. And then I go, okay, well, what's the best thing you could do without cloning? And it was like, well, what if I could get appointments for people? Maybe that would be interesting. So I started to go down this path where I built another company where we would go out and kind of be this outsourced appointment setter. Now I'm making it sound more basic than it is. I mean, it was really about understanding the right fit and the right message and finding the right opportunity and getting people at bats. Cause I was like, if I can't clone myself, well, what if I could get more at bats? And then at least my batting average goes up and, you know, I'm winning more. So I started to do that. And sure enough, I had some success with some companies, but others I didn't, I was failing. And there was this kind of big aha where I kind of reverse program. If you've ever heard like begin with the end in mind, right? It was kind of like that light bulb went off in my head. Begin with the end in mind. I was like,
damn right. I say that all the time, by the way.
Right. And so I was like, okay, end in mind. I want appointments. I started working backwards, reverse programming. And I realized there were all these companies that were missing foundations. And that was a big reason why this wasn't working. Because when I said, what's your value? They kind of scratch their head. And I would give them a test to be like, hey, if I went into your organization, I asked everybody that worked there, how do you create value and how you're different? Am I going to get the same answer? And I'd get these stares, right? Like, I don't know. Well, if you don't know, how do your customers know?
Yeah.
So much of Set Up to Win, and there's a bunch in it, all came from this experience of what were these small, mid-sized businesses missing that were preventing them from being successful, from really growing effectively. And sure enough, I started to crack the code on what that was. And I would say what we cover today, even if you put in two or three of these things, you try out a couple of these things, you're going to see the lift, because lift comes from kind of intentionality and getting clear so that you can get more focused, more intentional, more efficient when you go out in that market and try to grow, try to sell, share your idea.
Well, you broke it down into three different frameworks, right? Framework 1, 2, and 3. And the first one is the revenue equation. And I think what you talk about more so in this than anything else is identity. Who are you and who are you serving, right? So what you're talking about is getting very clear on,
I mean,
with self-awareness, because I think the more you know yourself, the more you know your company, the more you can maybe understand the world, right? And those around you. So is that what framework 1 is really all about?
Yeah. Framework 1 is called the revenue equation. And I kind of break it down into three things. The first one is, who are you? Like, how do you create value? Why did you come in business? How are you different? What's your experience? Like, what's the experience you give your clients? Because we want to rally our company around that and rally our message around it. And the second part of that framework is really, who do we sell it to? And where are they in their journey about hiring us? Like, are they even aware they have a problem? And maybe they're not. Right. So it's trying to understand who really buys. And I'm going to just pause here for a minute. We live in a tremendously huge world. And I want you to just think about this. A lot of times as an entrepreneur, you go, you know, who do you sell to? And you're like, well, anybody with a checkbook, or, you know, anybody in banking, anybody.
I used to say that, and I failed miserably, just so you know. Yeah.
Exactly.
Anybody who wants to write a book, we can help out. That's a bunch of crap, right? We got very specific, and the more specific, the more that we had standards, and that's what pretty much served us from step one till where we're at now.
You nailed it. And back to how big the world is. I mean, imagine if I just said, what if you had 100 more customers? What would that do to your business? 1,000 more customers. We're talking about a small number when you say there's what, 300 million people just in the US or whatever the number is. And so I think a lot of times, at least I was when I was an entrepreneur, I was afraid to go, oh, it's only going to be, you know, CEOs of companies that are also the founders that are between $5 and $10 million that live in Colorado. Oh my God, I just have a panic attack because there's only going to be 10 people. Well, that's probably, you know, 5,000 people. And if I could get 50 of them, I'm killing it.
Yes.
So much of the revenue equation is kind of like reflecting back to yourself. What's my company do in the world? How do I create value? Who do I do it for? And then the last part of that is like, do I have a process, a design? Is that design and process supported by technology and my team to make it all work? And I know this sounds basic, but I got to tell you, this came from me going into companies, and I would march out with my team to find some appointments, and we would strike out. And then I would say, well, why are we striking out? And then as I kind of unpacked and looked under the hood, it was because all these things were missing. Mm. So it's really about that intentionality and that focus, because when you have that, you're just so much more efficient. So that's a big part of the revenue equation.
Well, I also think when you're talking about a sales organization, you don't want to attract everybody into your organization. So forget about even just the clients for a second. Your culture is pretty well known before they even walk into that door, maybe, right? So you're going to attract a certain type of person based off of your marketing. And I realized that the more I put my, whether it's political beliefs or my beliefs in general out there, I started to attract like-minded people that wanted to be a part of this ride. Now, that made it very easy for me to communicate with them right now and then even 5 years from now, because they know who I am, they know what I stand for, and they either deselect themselves from my life or they migrate closer to it. And so probably what you're talking about more than even just getting the clients is, who are you? Put it on full display so you attract the right sales force. Is that right?
Very, very, very well said. Absolutely. You know, we hear this all the time, like, who are your external customers? Who are your internal customers? What they both have in common is they are customers. They are people that want you to solve their problem. They are people that want you to create value for them. So if you want to build an amazing sales force, then do what you just said. Make the world know what you stand for and ask people that want to stand next to you, with you, get in these adventures with you, to come do it and galvanize them, get them into your culture. And man, now you're removing friction and most likely you're functioning more as a team or a tribe because you all have similar values, similar DNA, and that creates lift, right? That's that whole team versus one scaling.
Yeah. And I think I made the mistake in my first couple startups to hire people exactly like me. What that really did was there was too many cooks in the kitchen. We're all trying to do the same thing. What I realized in this business in 2016, 2017, my first real hire was somebody who was completely different than me, right? She had different strengths. She had different wants. But what was cool about this is that now that we're talking this out in the open on this podcast, yeah, we have different strengths and maybe different visions for our lives, but what we share is the entrepreneur spirit, right? Have the freedom to put your creative ideas out into the world. So we all enjoy the same things. We all value the same things, freedom. We love America, capitalism, but you know, she was very different, her personality. She's not out there. She's not very outspoken like me, but my God, if you kind of go through the surface and get down to the basics, what do you stand for? What do you really value? That's what we're talking about, right? So strengths and weaknesses, and you can do all the tests out there, the personality tests, but that's important. However, the core values must be there and it must be unbreakable, I guess.
I'm right there with you. You know, and I think so much with sales and sales management and being an entrepreneur is about leadership. It's about leadership and communication and getting people enrolled or a belief, whatever the word you want to say, in your mission, in your cause, what you're doing in the world. And it's really hard if everybody doesn't want to go to the same destination. And imagine a road trip and there's six different people. Where do you want to go? And they all tell you different places. You're not going anywhere.
Damn straight.
And so, and customers know that too, right? Like if they see your website and your social and your podcasts and all this, and they're like, yeah, then that sales cycle, that sales funnel is going to be a lot more frictionless. You're going to move people through it because there's less discovery that they need to come through. There's less roadblocks or friction points. And it's the same when you build a team, same when you get people to go all in the same direction. It's all these things around sales and communication leadership. They all have the same thing going on. Yeah. Do I want to go there? Do I believe you can get me there? And do I want to be part of it? Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the core kind of ingredients.
Let's move to framework number two, the individual performance. And maybe this is something that I've really started to focus on more than anything else over the past maybe 18 months, having sales individuals being tracked with close rate and mm-hmm. you know, maybe different slumps, you know, and it's fascinating to kind of review and see maybe there are trends to certain people. But framework number two, what is this all about?
You know, this was one of these like accidental discoveries. So as I evolved my company, I came in to become a fractional sales leader in companies more and more and more. And I've got teammates that do the same thing. So now we're in this seat of not only like trying to figure out how to generate revenue, but we also run that seat with the revenue equation of like, how do we build the foundations? And once we started to solve all of that, what showed up was the human, that teammate. And I got to tell you, nobody in sales goes into sales because they want to lose. Nobody goes, I went into sales because I don't want to bet on myself. Like, that's not possible, right? We're all in sales because we want to be independent. We want to bet on ourselves. You know, we're taking chances on us and the team we're part of, right? And so if we start to look at our salespeople as cogs or just doing the same thing every day, we're going to miss out because every human's different. But we're the same in sales in the facts that we want to bring ourselves, we want to build relationships, we want to be successful, we want to win, we want to make money, we want to create change. Like, I could go on and on and on and on. So I started to meet with these sales teams as I would come to these companies. And at first I'd come in for the first day and people would have their arms crossed. Oh, not, this guy's going to come and tell me, and he's a consultant. Da, 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 da. And then what they realized was I was there to help understand them. And as I understood them, I could give them the tools and support to up-level them, to make them better. Just like a coach, like if you were a quarterback and they hire you, it's not because they think you are a shitty quarterback. They're hiring you because they think you're a great quarterback and they want to make you exceptional, right? That's what we're talking about. So in the world of this individual planner, I kind of had this idea, who better to tell me what somebody wants and what they're playing for than the person themselves?
Yeah.
Right? It was like another like basic aha moment. So the whole concept of this individual planner is, hey, can we start to build trust and a real relationship with our sales team and ask them things like, where do you want to be in a year? Where do you want to be in 5 years? How can I help you get you there? Hey, by the way, where do you spend all your time during the week? And are there places that I don't see this because I'm managing 20 people and all of a sudden I can find 2 or 3 or 4 hours back in your week because I don't need you in this one meeting that for some reason it's a carryover on your calendar? Or like, what other training do you want? How do you want to get involved? Do you want to get involved in a local association that does what we do and have a board seat? That would kill it with business development. So the whole idea with this individual planner is to start to build trust with your sales team and have them tell you what they need to be successful so that then you as their manager can do it. And you can team up. And I'm telling you, I've seen crazy breakthroughs with this. And again, I scratch my head and go, this is basic stuff. But I think we hold the bat too hard. We think things too complex. You know, build a relationship with your sales team. Learn how they can win and then help them win.
So this planner that you put in place, how often do you have to visit it? And is it... You know, I mean, I'm sure there are things you've caught that are pretty surprising, but you know, whether it's, hey, I just want more family time. I want more freedom. I want to be able to, you know, I don't know, create generational wealth. I don't know if you've seen stuff like that, but there are probably things that mean so much to these people. And that is, just Fridays off, or you don't have to do certain things throughout the day, and being in control of their schedule, right? They'll work 8 hours. It just has to be on their 8 hours, right? So like, what have you noticed, and how often do you have to look at this, review it, and maybe go over it with them?
Yeah. So I tell you, you find the coolest things. I was using some version of this with a VP of business development, and his compensation was tied to the team and the team's success. And I kept asking him, like, what do you play for? What do you play for? And he's like, recognition. I was like, what does that mean? And he's like, Carl, I want to be the best in the field. And if I'm out talking to our industry as a thought leader, then that's that. I'm a thought leader. And I was like, well, do you do that? And he's like, that's not in my job role. And I kind of was like, you're the VP of this company. You could make it your job role. What's standing in your way? And he's like, I don't know. I guess I've never thought about it. And I was like, well,
why somebody didn't give him permission is what you're saying. That's it.
Exactly. Or he didn't realize he could at least try. So that's, you know, there's a hint there with leadership's leadership. So I just said, look, what would you do if this was an employee? And he's like, well, I'd invite them to tell me what their plan is. I was like, well, guess what we're going to do? You're going to say the same thing. And the next leadership meeting, you're going to go, hey, I have an idea. I want to get involved as a speaker. I want to go out and talk, and you don't need to pay me anymore. As long as you pay my expenses and you let me fly around and do six of these a year, I'm good. And they're like, so you're going to go talk to our customers six times a year from a stage as a thought leader? Yeah. Where do I write this check? So these things show up like that. Another one is this woman, this was before COVID. She drove about an hour and a half to 2 hours every day back and forth. And she was like a young grandma. And she was like, I want to see my grandkids, but I don't get time, home in time. I was like, well, why don't you work from home one day a week? And she's like, well, if I did that, I would get that time back with my grandkids. I was like, this is easy. You know, like we can solve this. So you do, if you create a space that's safe and people can trust you as the sales leader or the owner, and you do what you say you're going to do, or if you can't do it, you tell them then. You don't string them along. You're just real with these people.
Yes.
Then you're going to get real results. And so to answer your question on frequency, I think about once a quarter, but I actually flip it around and I ask the salesperson to update it. I go, we're going to lock this down 4 meetings. This is the agenda. And you're coming with this update and you're presenting it to me, right? Because as sales leaders, we're so slammed, but ultimately this is your planner. This is your instruction manual. You need to own it. I need to empower you to build it, inspire you to do it, and then hold the space to really listen and ask questions. And then my job is to make it happen.
So let's just say an individual comes across a period where maybe they lack a little bit of confidence, or maybe there's just a couple bad appointments and it does do something to them psychologically. When do you get involved? I struggle with that because as an individual who has been in sales for many years, I just need to find my routine. I need to get back into it. And I think I focus on personal development, but I focus on personal development quite a bit. So I think that's the answer. I want them to kind of find their rhythm. And maybe if they come to me for help, I'll be able to interject. However, I'm very, I guess you could say, a little bit worried that maybe there are times that I'll try to jump in and then take the reins and be there every time maybe a flat tire happens, if you will. So how often do you get involved? If you start to see things, do you start to bring it up? Hey, is there anything you need from me? Can I help out in any which way? Is there anything I can do for you? What do you say about those type of situations?
Man, that is a great question because it has people's inner game, both as the leader and as the salesperson, and it brings forward all the head trash we have growing up. You know, did I have a wrestling coach that yelled at me too much, so I don't want a coach? You know, you know, did my parents micromanage me and I didn't get to go to the college I wanted because that's what they wanted? Like we all have these triggers in us, both as leaders and as people that are, you know, like being managed, if you will, or being coached. So some of the things I would share with you is it's about creating spaces where you are fully present. It's no different than a sales call. So if you're a sales manager and let's say you have 20 people, that's going to be really hard to have like 20 individual meetings, right? Yeah. But you could have, you know, a meeting with 3 of people every month, or you could take them out to lunch, or like you could start to like reorientate that, or you could kind of create peer systems, right? You could put your senior sales guy with a young sales guy and ask them to go, hey, I'm buying lunch once a month, and make sure that the senior guy knows that he's there as a coach. Right. There's things we can do that create these kind of partnership collaboration moments. Another is like internal peer groups that maybe you're running with all your senior guys and all your junior guys. But the point is, you got to have that intentional space to listen and learn and be present, turn your phone off, turn Slack off, and let that person know that they are super important to you. And when you do that, it becomes less about how you're going to coach them, because you're going to get into conversation. And so if somebody kind of keeps falling off the horse, it might be buddy up. It might be a real serious conversation. But at least if you are doing this in a routine, you can get preventive. You can get ahead of it. But to kind of answer your kind of pointed question, I think you got to figure that most of your salespeople, they want to be better, and you got to put them in places where they can win, like any other professional team. Sometimes you got to put them on the field of play, even though they don't want to, because they need the time.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. If you think my team can only win, you're making a mistake. They're going to lose too. You just want to win more than you're losing.
Yeah. I think the hardest thing for me as an entrepreneur early on was patience, right?
Yeah.
Letting people fail on their own, knowing, right, it might hurt in the beginning, but it's going to make them stronger and way more self-reliant in the future. So that was the hardest part, especially whenever we first started. We didn't have a lot of money. So every day was do or die, which means if there's a mistake, oh shit, we're about to go down. I need to get involved and handle all this. But as time goes on, you become more mature. You let people fail on their own. And therefore, I think they respect anybody who says, hey, go out there and try it. See what happens. There's an individual on my team who's just joined up with us. Very young guy, but he's going to be doing Facebook ads. And he's starting to take the reins with us. And he's just like, all right, can I do this? Can I do this? And I'm like, you know what? The bad Mike would have said, no, not until you're trained, not until you're ready. But I saw this gumption in him that I don't want to penalize. Hey, you know what? Go for it. Let's see what happens here. Right. And even if it does lead to a failure or a mistake, he's going to learn so much. But the reward of go out there and learn on your own, because I'm a guy who comes from the school of hard knocks. It's the way I learn.
Yeah.
But thank God I did, because it's like, it's so important for me to have experience in my mistakes. And I think this person's doing it at a very low level, not going to affect the company as much as maybe back maybe 7-8 years ago. So I let people do that. And I think hopefully it pays off. Do you have any advice for someone like me who says, you know what, if there's someone who wants to take the reins and try some things out, never penalize, because that will start to decrease their want to ever raise their hand ever again.
It's so true. And the thing is that this is kind of the paradox, right? As entrepreneurs that were gritty, brought it out there, got their hands dirty, you know, worked crazy hours, because every time we made a mistake, it meant, okay, we're not making payroll. So now I'm going to have to go do this thing to fix it, or it's really going to be horrible.
Yeah.
Yet we don't create that similar environment for our teammates, our employees. So it's kind of like, we're removing the life lesson cycling that we're in from our team and expecting them to do perfect work. Where if we look back at ourselves 5-10 years ago, we wouldn't have done that to ourselves. So I think it's a lot of all these things. It's a lot about, hey, do you really want to scale? Do you really want this bigger than yourself? Then you're going to have to relax into it. And there's going to be some things that make you uncomfortable. But again, it's getting in agreement with your team. Like, these are adults, functioning human beings. They're not robots. And, you know, sometimes it's just having that real conversation. Hey man, I'm going to let you do this, but I got to tell you, if you lose $500 to $2,000, it's going to give me heartburn. I'm going to be a little upset, but I'm going to live with it. If this is a $5,000 or $10,000 mistake, I can't handle that. So let's kind of get in conversation, but about what's real for me and what's real for you, and then get in an agreement for sure.
Yeah. One thing that I struggled with too, as an employee many years ago, is I would never take accountability for things. It was always someone else's fault. Right. And what happened was, is I would always try to blame someone else. Oh, it was because of that person, this person. And I never want that in this company. So, hey, you messed up. No worries. Think like an entrepreneur. That's our philosophy in this company. Sure. You can fix it. You know what? Even if the client didn't cancel the appointment, no matter what, take ownership of it, because if you take ownership, you can fix it. And I want you to take that accountability characteristic, because as time goes on and clients see you do that, you are going to gain their respect. And that is going to make your life so much easier. So even if you're on the sales force and something happens, and it truly is the client's fault, take ownership of it, because that means you are going to fix it. And so therefore, hey, I'm sorry about that. The communication was a little bit off. That's my bad. But when I see my team do that, oh my God, does it put a smile on my face. So that's another thing I'm sure that you probably have taught to other people in the past. Is that right? Just take ownership of every failure or even, mistake, little stumble.
I have another book just came out the last 6 months called Iceberg Selling, and it's all for salespeople. It's super fun, super fast read. And the whole idea is you got to look below the surface and see what's really going on. And the more you see, the more effective you can be. But a big part of this book talks about a drivership mindset. And I think the biggest question I ask every salesperson is, are you a passenger in your life or a driver?
Oh,
boom. So I want drivers on my team. End of story.
Great. Yeah. Because if you're a driver, right, you can fix things. You can take people to the promised land. If you're a passenger, everything is out of your control and people sense that in your body language, your tonality, in your decision making. It's awesome. So framework number three, though, I want to touch on this, the revenue planner. What's this about?
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating being able to cycle and learn quickly by going into a bunch of companies. I start to see patterns, regardless of industry, like they're just there. And one of the biggest patterns is this thirst. It's almost like this Pavlovian response. If you think about that dog experiment, right, where they bring the food or they ring the bell and the dog thinks there's food. And eventually they ring the bell and there's no food. And the dog still like thinks there's food. Right. And the thing with that is we all find that we want to grow by new leads. What's our next customer? Where's our next customer? Where's our next customer? Where's our next lead? And I got to tell you right now, if you have a business, you have a ton of trapped money with your current customers and your current database and your current CRM. You've got gold in there, but you keep stepping over it, right? You keep stepping over it to find the next new person.
Yes.
And so the revenue equation, this revenue planner concept is, hang on a minute. Let's try to figure out which activities, which tactics generate the most ROI. And then let's try to do more of those instead of this sporadic approach of, oh, we're going to go to trade shows. We're going to do social. Oh, we're going to do Instagram now. I'm going to do a YouTube shorts. And then I'm going to retarget people. I'm going to, it's like, wait a minute. Let's start with what's closest to the revenue. That's why I usually look at the funnel from the bottom up. What's closest right now? And then go up higher and higher and higher and higher. And what you're probably going to find is somewhere near the bottom to the bottom third of your funnel, there's a bunch of trapped revenue. And these could even be customers that are already buying one thing, but not another. And so the whole discipline here is, let's take a minute. Imagine if you even just took half a day, you brought your sales team in and said, I want you to think about everything you do and come back to the best of your ability with what creates the most value for the company and what are you best at? And then gave them another hour to say, I want you to go through all your leads, your Outlook, your Gmail, whatever it is, and find 5 or 10 people that you think we can reactivate right now. I would say by the end of the day, you're probably going to have this amazing list of activities you could go after to generate more sales, all for the cost of an afternoon. So this whole concept with a revenue planner is, can we get clear, even if we're a really small business, of like attribution, what activities, what groups of people create the biggest bang for the buck that leverages up the most, and start to train our team, our marketing team, our sales team to think that way. So they're not just running amok, and letting chance prevail. It's that intentionality of creating like additional possibilities. And that's what that whole chapter is about, is like discovering or rediscovering that.
Man, there are so many stats out there that show that the individual who has already given you some resources, some time, some money is way more likely to give you more, right? Because it's hard to get people to open their wallets for even $5. But if they've given you $5, they're more likely to give you 10 or 20 simply because maybe you gave them some type of piece of value or you made their life better. And therefore, they're more likely to do business with you or share your name. So yeah, what you brought up a very good point before. Quit looking for millions of people. Look for 300 people who are raving tribe members, right? They could share your name. They're raving fans that just nonstop are all about what your message is all about. So that to me is huge. And then when I started to analyze how we could find this group of people and serve them, right? I think it's the inch wide and a mile deep. You do that. You become an expert in your field. You attract a certain type of people. And then as time goes on, you widen it out with new services, new products, and serve them at a higher level, ultimately growing your team in the process. And I would assume many people struggle with that because that does require new systems, new processes. And many people sometimes don't have the vision for that. Might be the hardest part.
Yeah. I mean, you said it so beautifully. That was really great. And I also think it's kind of like what got us here as entrepreneurs won't get us where we want to go, right? What got us here won't get us where we want to go. And what got us here was adaptive, right? We adapted. Think about the business you probably started and the business you have now. It's probably not the same business, right? So we have this habit of as creators and even salespeople do, because salespeople are creators. We're creating solutions. That we kind of, you can call it shiny object, squirrel, whatever. But the point is, at some point in our careers as salespeople, as careers of sales leaders, as entrepreneurs, as people running companies, we've got to get disciplined and focused. Like, it's kind of like you've done proof of concept. People are buying this new thing. Stop finding other things to sell. Sell more of the thing that everyone's buying. Get laser focused, to your point, go like really deep and just own it. Become a master of it. And the cool thing there is all of a sudden sales and growth become easier because the people you're working with already want to work with you. Mm-hmm. There's so much less work of convincing or kind of explaining because you're the guy, you're the company that does this thing. And so by definition, that's people are coming to you for that specialty thing.
So in iceberg selling, I'm just looking at it right now, and we could probably have you back on, talk more about this one specifically, but when it comes to being a salesperson, I think that you need to boost maybe your communication skills, right? You need to increase your authority. You have to be more of a teacher rather than maybe an order taker. Those are some things that I recommend to our sales force that, hey, if you really want to establish maybe relationship capital, you just can't go in and just keep pitching. You give ideas, you listen first, right? It's all about asking questions more so than pitching. And then you follow up with a solution that fits their biggest problem after they speak first. Some things that I recommend when it comes to just sales in general, do you have any quick guideline points that you recommend to any sales individual out there?
Yeah. Well, you hit a lot of them. I would say, my favorite word for a salesperson is co-create. And the reason is we are doing something together to move toward a solution together. Mm-hmm. So to kind of play off what you're saying, and it is an iceberg selling, it really says something like this. If you have somebody that has a problem and they want to start to share that with you, do the research before you meet them. Learn everything you can. Show up like a professional. Do the pre-work. Do the pre-game. Watch the game film, right? Do all those things. Then when you meet, tell them what to expect. What's the day going to be like? Where are we going to go? Does this still sound right? And then start to get really curious. Ask big questions and stop talking. Listen for clarifying questions. Think of that iceberg. They're only showing you 10% at any one time. So what if you could see 20%, 30%, or 50%? We start going deeper and deeper into the water. The more you see, the more you can solve. So all I would say is if you can get to this place where you're not rushed, you're really present, you ask some questions, then you can kind of do this co-create thing. Like, hey, based on what you said, what about this? And most likely they're going to go, yeah, or well, kind of. What do you mean kind of? What if I adjusted this? And next thing you know, they're enrolled and they see you as someone that cares about them and is truly the expert. At that point in time, the next thing is usually not you going, what do I need to do to get you in a car today? It's usually them saying, this sounds really good. What's next?
Yes. That's a great green flag. I'm glad you brought that up. You want that statement. I love all this. What's next, right? You don't want to be the person because that makes you look desperate. What can I do for you to sign up today? I should have given you so much information, so much value. And I don't know if this can be taught, by the way. This maybe can be, but to boost the excitement level, to show them what's possible, right? Some people are introverts by nature. Some people are extroverts. Some people have a certain energy to them. But to excite people to move forward and to, like you said, co-create. I never thought of it that way, by the way. You're co-creating something on that sales call.
Mike, you nailed it. I mean, I think all of us can say we like it when we give somebody something that they want. Like when I bring you an idea and you're like, that's it. Like, that's a rush for me, man. That creates a ton of juice. So it's like, if I can know that that's where this is going, I'm going to learn. I'm going to share some ideas. I'm going to ask them to kind of brainstorm with me and live in this world of co-creation. If I do it right, most of the time, they're going to be like, this sounds great. What's next? Man, you nailed it.
Man, I think that humans are like water. They're always going to go to the path of least resistance. And the goal, I think, of any sales individual is to just make it easy for people to want to do business with you.
Totally.
Isn't that the game, right? You want to make it easy for them to say yes to the consultation, yes to doing business with you, yes to payment, right? I've seen a lot of people make it very difficult for all three of those stages. And all of a sudden, individuals are going to say, hey, even before I work with these people, it's actually so much work. Like this is an uphill battle just to hand over my money. What's it going to be like in this relationship? Make it easy and your life is going to be much better as a result.
Super dead on. I'll cap that real fast. I was doing a workshop on creating proposals today. And the number one thing I said is usability. They kept saying, well, what should be in the proposal? What about these pictures? And what about the, I was like, I want you to slow down and just ask yourself, usability. How is this simple, easy to understand, easy to use, frictionless? You're reporting back to me that you get me and there's a clear path forward. And if that means it's one photo or 10 photos, I don't know. But the point is easy, usable, intuitive, you know, aligned to that buyer type. That's what we're talking about. And that's what's really of service when I can meet somebody where they are and then move them, help them move to where they want to be.
Mm. And I always think of Amazon as sort of the pinnacle right now. They are all about speed. They're all about frictionless environments, right? When I go on there, I click a button, it's done. They'll say it's going to be delivered on Friday, but it comes on Thursday. It's the over-delivering, under-promising. It makes it easy for me to just search, buy, click, done, forget about it, and believe in the company. So yeah, you look at how these great companies are implementing all of these strategies, just adopt it, right? Quit trying to be clever. Just do what they're doing in a certain way for your company. Great. So yeah, outside of your books, is there a book that maybe stands out in your life that is something that you recommend to our audience? I always bring up Rich Dad, Poor Dad because it was a defining moment in my life and it set me free. So is there a book like that for you?
Yeah. I do so much work with teams, and I'll tell you a really, really super short version. When I ran my previous companies, I would say things like, I'm the only one that can. And one day I caught myself saying that. Ooh. And this, it was just kind of like, wow, dude, like who wants to work with somebody that always says that? And who wants to be the guy that has to work every night and every weekend? I don't want to be that guy anymore. And so I started to really learn about teaming. How do we bring teams together? And if you look at any of the really great sport teams, right, or anything that's a group of people that accomplish something, they didn't do it with just one person. They did it with the strengths of all these other people. So I started to get kind of enamored in that and found myself actually really good at bringing out the best in teams. And it might have been because for so many years I sucked at it. But there's a book by Lencioni about 5 dysfunctions of a team. And it's a parable. It's like a little story. It's a great audiobook. If you're on a plane, you can get done with it. If it's a 2 or 3 hour flight and you're listening to it, like at 1.5 or something like that. But it talks about, you know, really smart people working together, not creating optimal outcomes. And then this person comes in and starts to help them understand how to work together. And it changes everything. And so if you're that guy that's like, I'm always the one that has to, I would say, you know, start to play around with how other people have cracked teaming. And that's a good book to just kind of go, oh, that's a different perspective and get you on your journey.
Yeah, I think the moment you take this idea in your brain, if you say, hey, I'm the only one that can do this, and you make it tangible by saying it out loud into the universe, it's like reinforcing it and it's never going to end. You'll never be able to break that cycle, right? So the moment you start to say, what can I do differently or how can I change it so it's not reliant on me, you start to become a problem solver. So just by saying something out loud reinforces it. And it seems to be like a never ending cycle. And you caught yourself, it sounds like, with that.
I agree with what you said, by the way, too. And I did. Luckily, I did. And it was in front of a peer group with about 8 or 10 other people that were entrepreneurs. And when I caught myself, they all looked at me and they cared deeply about me. And they kind of were like, you finally got it. Like, you finally, like, we've been telling you this for years and you just didn't want to hear us, but you finally heard yourself.
Oh. So you have a website. I want people to check this out. Is it improvingsalesperformance.com? I believe that's the domain. Is that right?
That is correct. Improving sales performance.
So what happens if they go there? What will they find out?
Yeah, there's a ton of resources. So a lot of the worksheets and workbooks that we talked about in the book Set Up to Win are there. They're you know, just put in your email and you'll grab it. There's webinars on there. There's links to my three different books. You can also email me if you just want a PDF of it, like a digital copy. Fill out the form. Say, hey, I heard you on Million Dollar Book Club, and like send, you know, I'll send you the PDF. So there's a lot of really good resources there, as well as like what me and my team do when we come in and build sales organizations as fractional sales leaders or running workshops or speaking at keynotes, stuff like that.
Nice. And so the average company that comes to you, is there a certain size that you work with? Is it everybody? Is it an entrepreneur looking to start a company that with they have maybe one or two people, or is it depending on maybe 20, 30? Who is the like perfect person for you?
You're testing me in the whole, like, who's your ideal customer?
Yeah, maybe that's right.
Anybody that wants to.
Subconsciously, I'm really testing you. That's true. Yeah.
Really, at the end of the day, I would say about 80 to 90% of the people we work with are entrepreneur, founder-led companies where that person's responsible for the sales organization. And they're like, this is not my highest and best use. I don't have a lot of domain expertise here. And I'm looking for some support, or my team is looking for some support. So usually it's a B2B company, 5 to 25 million, usually 2 to about 10 salespeople, a sales leader that might be one of the owners, or they're kind of new. Like, it could be like somebody's son and he's never been a sales leader. And so we're trying to really help that like up-level the sales org, up-level the sales leader, up-level the sales team. But that's most of the time. I mean, we definitely do conferences and workshops for like departments within bigger companies. But at the end of the day, mostly who we work with and who are great fits are these entrepreneurial-led, owner-led organizations that are looking to up-level their sales org.
Well, I'm looking at your release dates of your books. It looks like it's almost like every year you're putting out a book. So you're falling in line with what I'm preaching. I think everybody, you know, they change, they develop, they learn new skills, and therefore they're completing the hero's journey by giving back with a book. And it seems like you have three books, about a year apart. Is that what it is?
That's about right. About a year, year and a half.
Yeah, perfect.
You found what I learned to do during COVID.
Yeah, many people reinvented themselves and realized they weren't living life to their fullest potential in 2020. I think it was such a blessing in disguise for people to kind of figure out their life going forward. It's awesome.
Thank you for asking and sharing that, by the way.
So guys, check out his books, Set Up to Win, Three Frameworks to a High-Performing Sales Organization, or the new one that just came out. I think you said it's the Iceberg Effect. Is that right?
Wait, selling.
Iceberg selling. There it is. And become a better salesperson. Let me pull up. Become a better salesperson by looking below the surface. Carl Becker, it's been an honor to talk with you. And the website, guys, improvingsalesperformance.com. I think it's the one, right?
Got it. Improvingsalesperformance.com.
All right. So he's easy to find. And it's resonating on Amazon. Many reviews, all 5 stars, looking really good. So Carl Becker, thanks so much, dude.
Really appreciate it. Super fun.
Remember, guys, $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.